KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music, if it is geek. It's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. I am Joe, and with me, of course,
is Caleb.
And
Underground Jason.
Underground. That's right. We are underground, quite literally.
Right. Yes. Yes, we are.
Thankfully, we're not buried underground.
Right. We're not buried underground, nor are we underwater. At least not at the moment.
No.
Right.
And that is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because then...
Though they gave it their best effort, so...
And who is they? The aliens,
whoever flooded the other section of our studio.
Mm.
Or the building that our studio is housed in, to be precise. The studio itself is quite dry.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, like the other section of, right. I can understand the confusion.
Don't want the GM like, what?
Right, yeah.
If he's even listening or not, but yeah. Just let me say, for you know how it'll bounce, like Kevin Bacon or something. Someone's listening, and then they contact someone else, and someone else.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking exactly. Of Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon.
Yes. What? Kevin Bacon is a movie star.
He is.
Yes.
Who stars in movies.
Lots of movies.
Right.
And what we like to do at the beginning of our show is new releases.
Including movies.
Including movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
I think I see how that works.
Cool.
Woo.
I'm glad someone does. It helps. All right. Speaking of new releases in the theater, we've got The Best of Me. A pair of former high school sweethearts reunite after many years when they return to visit their small hometown. If that sounds of no interest to you, maybe The Book of Life. The Book of Life is the journey of Mulatto, a young man who is torn between fulfilling the expectations of his family and following his heart. Before choosing which path to follow, he embarks on an incredible adventure that spans three fantastical worlds where he must face his greatest fears. If Books of Life don't sound interesting at all to you either, maybe Fury, April Fury. 1945, as the Allies make their final push in the European theater, a battle-hardened army sergeant named War Daddy, played by Brad Pitt, commands a Sherman tank and her five-man crew on a deadly mission behind enemy lines. Outnumbered and outgunned, with a rookie soldier thrust into their platoon, War Daddy and his men face overwhelming odds in their heroic attempts to strike at the heart of Nazi Germany. If maybe you don't feel like getting furied, maybe you like birds, particularly men who are birds. There's Birdman, an actor, played by Michael Keaton, who is an actor, famous already. For portraying an iconic superhero, struggles to mount a Broadway play. In the days leading up to an opening night, he battles his ego and attempts to recover his family, his career, and himself.
Ooh.
Supposedly getting lots of very good reviews.
Hmm. Heavy, Doc.
Yes.
All right, so if the movies in the theater are not quite your cup of tea, perhaps you would like to find some movies on Blu-ray or DVD. Mr. Peabody...
Rhyming, I like it.
Mr. Peabody and Sherman just dropped on Blu-ray and DVD. The world's smartest and most successful dog?
There could be.
And his adopted boy enjoy much, including a time machine.
Time machines.
But the laws of time are wonky, and when Sherman breaks the rules, it is a race against reality itself to set things right.
That's heavy, Doc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there something wrong with the gravity in the future? If that's not quite your speed, perhaps you want something a little bit more... macabre. Perhaps Penny Dreadful would be up your alley. It's the complete first season on Blu-ray and DVD. The most notable figures of Victorian literature, Dracula, Dorian Gray, and Victor Frankenstein, are joined together in a quest to save one lost soul. But can their combined strength outweigh their own darkness? If you're not into Victorian mysteries, maybe you want to try something... Oh, it still involves time travel? X-Men Days of Future Past might be your more might be for you. On Blu-ray and DVD, this film reunifies the X-Men universe under one banner and does so with one of the best-known X-Men stories. McCann, the time-traveling abilities of Shadowcat and the Wolverine and the Wolverine's ever-repairing body be enough to set the world to right?
I don't know.
Say you wish to push the realms of sci-fi into other
Oblivion?
Places. Not quite Oblivion, but just into the edge of the galaxy, perhaps.
Oh.
You might consider Star Wars Rebels, Spark of the Rebellion, on DVD. It's the lead into the new animated series set just on the edge of the Galactic Empire. The eclectic crew of the Ghost are the beginning of the rebellion that will not only change the face of the galaxy, but also protect the innocent from the grasping hand of the Empire and the rising Sith.
Supposedly, that version, I believe, comes with a bonus scene with Darth Vader, and I think they actually got James Earl Jones.
Oh, nice.
Because, yeah, when I watched it on TV, they didn't have that scene, but I saw a little, like, story, and it said, like, bonus scene with Darth Vader and James Earl Jones.
Very cool. So,
yeah.
Something to maybe check out.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the mood for more of a heartfelt drama, perhaps you would enjoy Beneath the Harvest Sky on Blu-ray and DVD. A pair of longtime friends make a pact to escape the confines of their small town by buying an equal share in a car and just getting out. But their friendship is pressed on many sides, not the least of which is when one of them decides to join a drug smuggling ring to make his half of the money.
Whoa.
Can they escape with their friendship intact?
Whoa.
Yeah.
That got heavy.
That got real heavy at the end there.
Speaking of heavy.
Video game heavy or?
What? I don't know. It's big releases this week, like based on, I don't know. I was trying to help you make a segue.
I completely failed at that. But there are a lot of new releases on the video game. On the video game front, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest of which, in my mind, is probably Borderlands, the pre-sequel. Set in the future of Borderlands.
The future
and
past.
The past of Borderlands 2.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually a pre-sequel. Go figure.
My head.
Beyond that, if you wanted more Minecraft on more different things... well, they're giving it to you practically every way that they possibly can. Now on Vita, you have your new shiny version of Minecraft. Past that, we have, let's see, the re-release of Telltale's Walking Dead, the complete first season. It's getting a next-gen or a current-gen, I guess, now. Release on PS4 and Xbox One. Also getting a release on next gen, but swapping between systems is Peggle 2, now getting its release on PS4. And also getting a next gen release, Sleeping Dogs Definitive Edition gets a release on PS4 and Xbox One.
Mm-hmm. And The Evil Within dropped this week too. On Xbox One and PS4.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about the previous generations, but that dropped this week also.
So that's pretty heavy.
Unfortunately, GameFly didn't send me that one, but they did send me the pre-sequel, so...
Oh, kind of a... that's not so bad. It's like, well, not quite maybe what you were looking for, but not a disappointment.
Yeah, because I should have paid attention, like... Because I sent Destiny back, and I was like, okay, if I time it just right, maybe I'll get, like, one of those two. And then after I sent Destiny back, and I, like, looked at the list again, they changed, like, the date they were going to ship Evil Within to this last Saturday. So I was like, oh, well, I haven't gotten an email yet about them receiving Destiny, so probably not going to get the Evil Within.
Yeah,
but
darn.
Not the Borderlands, so that's...
Still
cool.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, there is one last big release that was actually hiding at the very end of the list. The Fear series has been a kind of fun first-person shooter jaunt into the horror territory, and the online massive multiplayer version is releasing today, or on Friday. So look mm-hmm. forward to being fearful with your friends, maybe.
Massively fearful.
Right. Because it is a free-to-play type of game, so it'll be interesting to see what sort of microtransactions they cram into a game like that.
Yeah, that would be interesting. But you're not scared, or you don't want to be scared, but you wish to read.
Nobody wants to be scared.
You wish to read of things that are mysterious and powerful. Perhaps you would like to check out this week's comics. Very cool thing in DC land. It's Justice League number 35. The whole world has gone mad. LexCorp and Wayne Enterprises have joined forces. Metahumans fighting metahumans.
What?
And then the cherry on top is, what the heck is the Amazo virus and whom is responsible for it?
What?
What indeed?
Oh, that's insane.
Over at Marvel, it's X-Force number 10. The team has their eye set on a new recruit. Forget-Me-Not. That's the name.
The recruit?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But convincing him to join may be problematic. Plus, how do you track down someone who slips from memory once they are out of sight? That's Forget-Me-Not's special ability. That's kind of a cool ability. Could be problematic, but also really interesting. Then over at Dark Horse, it's Dark Ages number 3 of 4. While gaining a new ally in the war against the demons from the sky, the mercenaries may have opened up a very, very old rivalry.
Dun, dun, dun!
From Image, it's Birthright number 1. When the Rhodes Sun disappeared, they couldn't think of anything worse. When the sun returns, they are equally unprepared for what comes next. And then IDW is again swinging for the fences with their what's the franchise properties? I guess the phrase when it's not their own original thing, but they would do any work for others. Skylanders number 1 of 5.
Oh, okay.
In case you aren't familiar, IDW also does the friendship is My Little Pony Friendship is Magic and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and a number of other licensed franchises. There we go.
Okay.
Anyway, back to Skylanders. Number 1, the hit video game and toy series is now coming to the comic book shelves near you. Featuring fan-favorite characters and stories found nowhere else, but that tie back into the core game and story. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we would not be able to finish out comics without a recommendation from our good friends at Wow Cool Comics. Today they recommend A City of Whiskey and Fire by Noah Van Shever. As is their speciality at Wow Cool, they specialize in indie comics or creator-owned comics, and this is another one.
Okay.
It is a powerful historical fiction set in 19th century Denver and covers life in the hard and harsh world and the events leading up to the Great Fire of 1863. Yeah, it's also got kind of a novelty page size that's 7x7, so it's a square comic.
Huh. Okay.
Kind of neat.
Yeah.
Hope kind of catch your eye.
Shake things up.
Yeah. Speaking of shaking things up.
Yeah.
I got some new music for you.
Woo!
If the simple note will stop moving. Okay, we've got a new album from The Two Bears. That's right. You know, when you think about shaking and moving, you think about bears, right?
Mm-hmm,
especially two of them.
Two bears shaking.
At least.
At least two.
These are dancing bears. See how they move.
Mm-hmm. Well, their new album, The Night is Young, it's the second full-length release for the duo of Joe Goddard and Raph Rundell. Includes guest appearances from Sabusio and Quito Ikan Senyaka. Mm-hmm.
Good effort there. Good effort.
Yeah, probably none of that, right? Moving on, yep. We've got a new album from Jesse J called Sweet Talker. Third full-length release for the British pop singer-songwriter features guest appearances from 2 Chainz with a Z, De La Soul, Ariana Grande, Nicki Minaj, and Lindsey Stirling. And we have a new album from We Were Promised Jetpacks called Unraveling. It's the third full-length studio release for the Scottish indie rock band, was produced by Paul Savage. We have a new album from Melvins called Hold It In. It's the first studio release for the band in 4 years. It sees Buzz Osborne and Dale Crover joined by Butthole Surfers Paul Lear and J.D. Pincus. Then we have a new album from Foxygen, .. and Star Power.
Star Power.
Third full-length studio release for the California psych rock band formed by Sam France and Jonathan Rado. Features contributions from such artists as Wayne Coney of Montreal's Kevin Barnes, Tim Presley of White Fence, and Bleached. And if you want to listen to us being Robots Attack and KSU, but you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website and never be without the underground sound. And of course, pro tip.
If you wish to find us faster, do a search for KSCU. That's our call letters. That is unique to our station. 103.3 FM is not unique to our station, despite it being unique here.
That is right. Okay, that's going to do it for new releases. Is that? I don't know. You gave me a look like you wanted to say something else, Jason. Okay, so I'll make sure. Don't want to cut you off.
No.
Okay, good.
No.
Excellent.
I was thinking about doing an AI quote about being unique.
Oh, okay. We need that.
I decided against it.
We need to get that little, if we can ever get a soundboard, we need to get that little sound clip of I'm special, I'm unique.
Yes.
You know, for the like one person out there who would know where that reference is from.
Right. What AI didn't take the entire world by storm? Something.
Who knows, maybe, but. Anyway, we're going to take a music break now, let you relax and get ready for a Robots Attack. And of course, when we come back, we'll have the news. Gentlemen, teasing the folks some news for them to English you wait for.
How about one of the oldest time capsules recently opened here in the States?
And a public service message, kind of... Do you know what a teal pumpkin means?
Whoa.
It's been dipped in paint?
Well, beyond that.
Oh, okay. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Because it's not that.
Or is it?
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
No.
Stay tuned and find out.
That's right. All right. We'll be back with more Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the underground sound.
News.
That's right. You are in the news here. KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the underground sound, and Robots Attack. Who's got our first story for the folks in Radio Land or Internet Land or wherever you're listening to this?
Listener Land. I will have our first story of the evening, and it is about the time capsule that was recently opened in Boston.
Now this, a lot of time traveling on the show.
There
Boston.
Is. Boston, they found capsule in the yard. Nice.
I was not expecting you to crack that out.
The capsule itself dates back to 1901.
Oh, okay.
That's a ways back.
Mm-hmm. And apparently it's been hiding inside the head of the lion statue outside of one of Boston's big landmarks.
Oh, okay. I saw the headline for this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I thought this was kind of cool.
Hiding in plain sight.
Yes, hiding in plain sight. This box is a...
What's in the box?
What's in the box? Yeah, capsule. Now, what's in the box was a number of objects, not the least of which was a...
capsule core operation stuff.
Not this time. The... Okay. Was a red
that
book.
Show has been going for a long time, so I mean,
It's possible, but I don't think it's quite that old. One thing they found was a red cover book, which was unmarked on the outside, and unfortunately, as of now, continues to remain a mystery because after they pried open the copper box, that the contents were deemed too fragile to be opened, like. In the public setting like this without some conservation being applied to them. So, unfortunately, there is still some mystery about what is actually inside.
What's in the
box?
We can't open it just yet.
But it does. It is one of the earliest...
So none of them were like obvious? I mean, there wasn't just like a coin or something like that?
Let me see.
Or was the coin about to fall apart in somebody's hands?
Let's see.
For the love of coins, man.
It looks like there was.
If there's no good answer, I'm not trying to press you to just make one up.
No, I'm not. I'm not seeing any.
There was ancient candy corn.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
Or maybe it's the best ever.
Yeah, maybe it's like wine age.
Right.
Yeah.
I think,
man, when that cornstarch, when that gets a good age on it.
Okay. What it looks like is what happened was that they opened it and then they realized that everything in there was really fragile. So they didn't actually go through the box, right. But they found the red book on top and like, oh, this is so there. Okay. We know something of what's inside. There'll probably be another story in the near future about what's actually in there. But
so they were afraid to damage the stuff in it.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, which is, makes sense since it. Everything in that box is 113 years old and is in actually really, really good condition. No mold or mildew or anything like that seems to have damaged the contents. So it will be a really interesting look into that time period and stuff. So here's to history in the making, and hopefully they will be able to extract some really interesting stuff out of the
That book better be good.
Yeah,
so honestly, all this build up for it, and it turns out it's just like
I know the mystery is killing me. Okay,
but
so, yes,
here is something that you don't
ruin
have
my segue.
To,
by the way, but
that's fine. You'll be able to figure out a segue from this to that. I'm sure.
Probably
of it.
Not.
I'm almost certain of it because this here you don't have to wait for. You know, you don't have, it doesn't have to be like,
right. It's very immediate.
Yeah, you can do it. Anyone can do it.
Yay.
And that's, if you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes, but have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook.
Okay, so that becomes my best segue ever. What is in common with something that not everybody can do and teal pumpkins? Anybody know? Anybody?
I
see it. I see in your eyes, Caleb, that can tell.
I have no idea. How do you get eggs?
Eggs. Actually, partially, yes.
Whoa.
We got
Whoa.
It.
Whoa.
Okay.
Closer than I was expecting.
Okay, there is a fear that happens every year during the Halloween season that is very not cool if you're a kid, and that is if you are deathly allergic to eggs or soy products or wheat or nuts or on down the list. It's like a minefield for you.
Mm.
So... some people that are relatively clever came up with the teal pumpkin project. Basically, try and put a teal pumpkin outside of your home to show that you have other options besides candy that you're going to give children. So small toys, crayons,
okay,
things of that.
That's
ilk.
Really clever.
Dental floss, miniature toothpaste.
Hopefully, it's... yeah. I'm just imagining kids like chugging toothpaste now. Just like, oh, best Halloween ever.
Little bottles of mouthwash.
All the toothpaste. All the mouthwash I can drink.
Oh,
geez. Okay. So that might not be the best idea if you're doing the teal pumpkin project. But I thought it was a neat idea, and I hope it ends up catching on. And I hope it ends up being something that. It's like a little kit that you can buy in stores that it's like the paint for your pumpkin along with little toys that's sitting there next to all of the candies and whatnot. Because I can imagine it actually being comparable price to candy because the candy is not cheap either. So
yeah, mm-hmm.
It's nice to be able to make children's happy that are deathly allergic to things.
Yeah.
In my view, I think.
That's right.
Unless it's wrong, I don't want to be like overstep my bounds here.
No, if that's wrong, I don't want to be right. So.
Okay.
Well, my story is involving a hero. A hero.
A hero.
You may not expect.
I need a hero.
From the Marvel Universe.
Oh.
All right.
Does he carry a teal pumpkin?
It's not a he.
Does she carry a teal pumpkin?
Does it carry a teal pumpkin? But
everything floats down here.
But Marvel is announcing another ongoing series starring a mutant superhero. Right?
Okay. Yeah, okay, okay.
Okay.
But it doesn't involve an A-lister like Storm or Cyclops.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, you got my attention.
Instead,
it's practically a teal pumpkin.
It's Squirrel Girl.
Huh.
Who will soon be starring in her own ongoing series. Via Entertainment Weekly, Marvel revealed a new book called The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
That could be absolutely awesome or horrifying.
Picture is pretty funny.
Okay.
Speaking of pictures, since this is the radio and you can't mm-hmm. see it now while listening, but right. Caleb, how can they perhaps check out this picture?
How do we see pictures in this modern age?
If you would like to catch up with pictures or images or videos that we have that are in the stories we have talked about, links are available on our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Robots Attack Show, and they also on our Twitter account, which is twitter.com/robotsattackme, all one word. There you go. Now we're turning you back to the story.
Your regularly scheduled story.
Yeah.
Almost as interesting as the heroine herself is the creative team picked for this project.
Uh-oh. Hmm.
The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl will be written by Ryan North, writer of Boom's Adventure Time comic.
Huh.
Ryan North also writes the amazing Dinosaur comics. You mm-hmm. should check those out, too.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And drawn by Erica Henderson.
Ooh.
Quantum and Woody is what they label.
Mm-hmm.
That team and the title offer a pretty good indicator of what direction Marvel is pursuing with this book. The Unbeatable Quirky. Squirrel Girl will follow the misadventures of Doreen Green as she leaves her current gig as Luke Cage and Jessica Jones' nanny to go to college.
Uh-huh.
In between attending classes and making friends, Doreen will have to suit up and use her squirrely powers to defend the planet from all manner of threats. The Unbeatable objective suggests that North and Henderson will be playing up Squirrel Girl's talent for defeating the most formidable of villains. In the past, Squirrel Girl has managed to single-handedly defeat villains like, wait for it, Doctor Doom,
what?
And Thanos.
Wow.
The Unbeatable. I want to see this story because single-handedly taking out Thanos, that's no small feat.
The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number one will debut in January of 2015.
Hmm. Well, there you are then.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wow. that's
some power right there.
Okay, telling something else that you can't beat.
you can't beat these prices.
Right. Well, it has nothing to do with prices. At least not yet, because it's not out yet.
Oh.
Anyway, everybody is in a mad dash to create the best batteries in the world, because everybody wants to have their wireless devices last forever and do cool things and be mm-hmm. light and cool and whatnot, blah, blah, blah.
And also power the future of car travel as well, depending on who you talk to.
That's true. That is true. So, in that vein, somebody came up with a new lithium-ion battery version, which I've already done like stories in the past about new versions of this, but this one's even cooler.
Even cooler?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's kind of cool because
I'm excited.
Cool as in temperature or cool as in?
Sort of. Kind of cool as in temperature because it harnesses the power of...
Love!
Well, that would be quite the power right there. But suntan lotion, sunscreen.
Oh. It's powered by sunscreen? Is it like Mr. Fusion?
Sort of. Not really. But okay, here's the thing. The active ingredient in sunscreen is 9 times out of 10 titanium dioxide gel. Okay. Now, the key is they figured out how to use this titanium dioxide gel to create microstructures in the new, like, everybody is doing it type of micro tech sort of processes. Mm-hmm. But doing out of a titanium dioxide gel is kind of impressive because normally it's soft.
So yeah.
Making a structure out of this is kind of a big deal as far as I can tell. But by using this unorthodox material, they create a new kind of the vein that runs in between the two sides of the battery. That's kind of been the key for all of the breakthroughs in lithium-ion batteries in the last little while.
Mm-hmm.
So by making it out of this stuff, it allows it to charge 20 times faster than it ever did before.
Wow, yeah, because that's the kicker. That's what creates the heat, is when you have to move the electrons across the membrane of the battery.
Right. It seems to, the main trick is that it can charge up to a 70% charge really, really quickly. It sounds like the last 30% is a little bit heavier of a trick. But if you just count on that, mm-hmm. that's not so bad. If you just build your batteries for it having just a 70% charge,
right.
that's a very fast charging battery. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, it holds the charge for up to 20 years.
Whoa.
At least according to Whoa. Math, I'd assume, since I don't think they developed this 20 years ago. But math is good, so mm-hmm. they know these
things.
Theoretically
holds up to 20 years, because that's like the other kicker. Like lithium-ions hold it for a while. NiCads, but those are like weeks or months. You can't measure it in years, not
right.
really.
Yeah, so this is definitely, if it ends up becoming easily mass producible and all of the other litany of things that could completely derail this project, if it ends up working out, this could be a really, really good technique for having rechargeable car batteries.
That's pretty awesome.
As well as every other, I'm holding a smartphone right now. It would be kind of cool to be able to have it charge in 2 minutes flat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would not be too bad at all.
I'd be okay with it just maxing out at the 70%. I'd just relabel the 70% as the new 100%.
And then everything
and then 130%. That's what I would do.
That's when you put it on into the bonus time. You know, this is your
right.
extra boost. You know.
Exactly. The top off. It's topping off the tank, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right, so you know, actually kind of spinning off of the idea of...
No, you're not allowed to spin off.
The battery that lasts longer. One of the things that drains batteries is displays, but there's new technologies being developed, which will actually might help make cars lighter. Because they currently okay. have a mix of digital and analog components as the...
The dash is
right. a lot of analog parts that still, I mean, there's a number of digital ones nowadays, but
right.
they haven't it hasn't really exploded because LCD panels come in squares or rectangles. That's basically how the only shape they come in because of the way they've been built up until this point, which is where the chips that control each of the pixels are along the edges. Well, Sharp is actually developing a new kind of LCD that has the controller chips in between the pixels. So now, instead of being at the edges, you can have them in between. So you can now cut them into more unique shapes. You can actually put a curved shape into your
I don't know if I approve of
LCD
that.
Panel. So this could actually mean that your car stereo could look, or the integration of... a screen into your car could look like an integration of a screen into a car, as opposed to we have now stuck an enormous iPad in your car or an oversized iPad, which
or a very small iPad.
Yeah, not to knock Tesla or any of the other touchscreen devices, but it's still a square in the middle of your console. Imagine being able to integrate the design, the flow of the console
make it look more
thing.
Organic.
Yes.
Sense.
It's
part of the design instead of.
The visual flow is more natural, let's put it that way. So that could be really cool. It's still kind of prototype stage.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little bit future tech, but it's probably, if all goes well, it looks like it's probably going to be 2 to 3, maybe 5 years before we start seeing this more commonly in high-end vehicles, perhaps. But they were showing it off recently at the CTech Expo in Japan. So hopefully it's not going to be like CES products where you see it on the floor and then never, ever again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like these displays in vehicles or even in like a device, because like as it is now, most devices are rectangles. Mm. Same problem, because it has all the chips on the outside. The amount of chips in the middle, you can now actually make round devices or oblong devices, or you know, you name the shape and probably will fit it device. You know, it opens up the possibility of what you can do with what a screen is. So I thought that was pretty rad.
Speaking of
rad. It is
rad,
pretty rad.
And things that are rad. You're listening to KSCU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound, specifically Robots Attack in the news. Now, my next story could be considered a tad controversial. So uh-oh. I hope that I do not get in trouble for this. Okay. But I did find it interesting because I really didn't know much about this.
Okay.
But yeah, apparently the world's first genetically modified babies will graduate high school this year.
Huh.
So this story, if you remember the sci-fi thriller Gattaca, for those who never saw the film and or skewed all pop culture in the late 90s for some reason, it was a popular movie that came out in 1997. I guess it was popular. About genetically modified human beings.
No, it wasn't.
It was fairly popular, I think, by comparison.
No. Gattaca.
But now some literally genetically modified human babies born that same year are entering their senior year of high school.
Okay.
The first successful transfer of genetic material for this purpose was published in a U.S. medical journal in 1997 and then later cited in a human reproduction publication in 2001. Scientists injected 30 embryos in all with a third person's genetic material. The children who have been produced by this method actually have extra snippets of mitochondrial DNA, or mtDNA, from two mothers, meaning Whoa. These babies technically have three parents. It's still unclear whether all 30 babies turned out healthy. The Institute for Reproductive Medicine and Science at St. Barnabas participants of the experiment finally began following up with at least 17 of the now teenagers earlier this year, according to the UK's Independent. This article, they reached out, you know, for some comments and whatnot from the IRMS, but they haven't heard anything back yet. But while we don't know the identity of these genetically modified teams or even how they are doing health-wise at this point, the ethics of creating designer humans is still very much a hot-button issue, hence kind of the controversial nature of the story. Modifying humans genetically to create some superior race of people or simply to choose one preferred visual trait over another has been debated among scientists, politicians, and others ad nauseum. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration no longer even allows such genetic modification embryos, citing them as a, quote, biological product, and thus under its jurisdiction. They put the kibosh on this practice back in 2002. However, these original embryonic modifications were for parents who would potentially pass on severe genetic diseases to their children if it weren't for scientific intervention. These teens could potentially pass on their genetically modified material to the next generation. So even if no other humans are legally able to be created this way in the future, we've already introduced biologically modified genetic material into the population with the potential to affect large slews of future generations to come via reproduction.
That's interesting.
No. Yeah, I hadn't heard anything about this sort of case. I mean, I knew, you know, of like the discussion of had been talked about.
Yeah. But, immediately what popped into my mind was the old Jamiroquai video, Virtual Insanity, because it's about how genetic engineering running amok and so on. And,
Please go on.
Oh, okay.
Just continue.
Is there anything else you wanted to say about that? Or?
No, actually, that's about it.
Okay.
All right. So I think what we'll do is we'll take a music break and then we'll come back with some more news.
Sounds good.
So we'll be back with more Robots Attack here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. like them on Facebook, and check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Celebrate the great and almighty Gord at the world-famous Half Moon Bay Art and Pumpkin Festival, October 18th and 19th. It's 2 days of magical autumn splendor in the world pumpkin capital. Catch the Great Pumpkin Parade on Saturday, October 18th at 12 noon. Enjoy festive food and drink, harvest-inspired crafts, and three stages of smashing entertainment. Ooh, delight in an expert pumpkin carving, a bone-chilling haunted house, tasty pumpkin pie, photos with the grand champion Megagord, fun-filled contests, and monster pumpkins galore. The Half Moon Bay Art and Pumpkin Festival, October 18th and 19th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on historic Main Street. Admission is free! For information, call 650-726-9652 or visit MiramarEvents.com. And Miramar Events is all one phrase.
News.
That's right. We're back with more news here on Robots Attack on KC Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. Who's got our next story for the folks?
Okay. I know everybody is super excited about Walking Dead starting up again, and so people are getting their zombie fix.
It was a good premiere. It was good.
But if that is way too serious for you, there is a little bit lighter version of zombies coming to televisions near you, or at least they're working that direction.
It was pretty intense, so okay.
The Resident Evil movies are going to be turned into a television series.
Huh.
Okay.
Yes. The company behind the Resident Evil movies, let's see if I can find it really quickly here. Constantine Films is looking to start an entire television division, which they're going to adapt the Resident Evil series and Mortal Instruments and Perfume, which I'm not really familiar with.
That's one I do not recognize. It's probably another one of those supernatural romance.
I guess they could turn the Resident Evil series into like a teen romance with zombies type of thing.
Yeah, you could probably pull that angle.
So they're actually basing it off the movies and not the games?
That's what it sounds like.
Okay.
But who knows? Because they kind of did their own thing with the series to begin with the movies, kind of loosely basing it on all of the video games anyway. There's the characters, but they're not really the same people or anything like that.
Yeah, no. But they've had some interesting stuff they've done a couple interesting things with it, at least the movies, that is. I rather enjoyed the most recent version, even though it was not a good movie by any means. It was still kind of fun seeing them kind of like play with some of the stereotypes that they've created through the films themselves.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to remember if, like, how sane I was by the end of that movie, because it was taking its toll on me.
Like I said, it wasn't good, but I kind of enjoyed it, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I really like the beginning of the series a lot, and I like Resident Evil 1 and 2 quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, from things that may or may not be good to things that also may or may not be good, but for different reasons. The U.S. Air Force's X-37B robotic space plane is going to be returning to Earth after being in space for 2 years.
Wait, robotic? Does it have like arms, or how? What makes it robotic?
It's control. It's an autonomous vehicle.
Okay, so it's a UAV.
It's a spaceborne UAV, effectively.
Okay. I'm with you now. I just wanted to make sure it had arms or not. That's a robot to me.
Yeah, it's not like Outlaw Star or nothing like that.
Okay.
From the report is it's something kind of, it looks a lot like a the space shuttles that were recently retired.
Oh, okay.
For obvious,
but smaller, or
I believe so. The one of the reasons why it might be around the same size is because there's probably an impressive sensor package in it.
There is.
as of yet, the contents and the full mission of the experimental plane are sort of not really being spoken about, unfortunately. But
they don't want to talk about the impressive sensor package.
Well, the impressive sensor package is a speculation from those. As the saying goes, those familiar with the matter.
Okay.
One of the things that makes this particular device interesting is that it can be refueled and it can change its orbit and move freely in space. It's not stuck in orbit like the ISS or a satellite or something like that. Now,
so what sort of fuel does it run off of? Or?
They don't say in this particular article.
Love.
I was thinking like nerds, like the candy.
I'm sure there's a lot of speculation about this particular vehicle. Okay. So
right.
Who knows? But the one thing we do know is that it is when we were returning to Earth to kind of just sort of check it out, see how it's doing, what the status of it is. And it is one of the reasons why they made it in the first place is that it's potentially less expensive than a satellite and more flexible because you can change its payload by just bringing it back to Earth. You don't have to send it up there and leave it for 10, 15, 20 years or so.
Okay.
So potentially less atmospheric pollution in terms of like debris and more versatile. So we'll see. Like I said, it might be good. It might be being used for good. It might be being used for intelligence gathering, depending on how you feel about that.
Mm.
You know, but in any case, it is a fascinating device because it's autonomous, and so it's kind of like it's sort of another example of an autonomous vehicle that isn't, you know, doing anything nefarious yet. In terms of
yet, until it gets the robot arms.
Well, that's why you don't give it robot arms. See, yeah, or you know,
yet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but anyways, it's on the edge of science, and that's kind of rad too. So there you go.
Nice. So my next story actually involves space.
Uh huh.
Space. Mars.
And actual time capsules.
Whoa. Okay. We were bringing it all together.
That's too much stuff.
These are digital time capsules.
Oh, okay.
What?
MIT students and astronaut Buzz Aldrin want to send a digital time capsule to Mars.
So USB drives?
Maybe. Maybe. But not quite.
Okay.
Because a group of students from MIT and other universities are planning to send a time capsule to Mars. As reported by Boston Globe, the aptly titled Time Capsule to Mars, quite original, project hopes
capsule to Mars.
To carry digital messages to the Red Planet within the next 3 years.
Right.
Hmm.
To deliver the messages, the team will transport the data using a series of small satellites referred to as CubeSats that are equipped with quartz storage technology that is said to store terabytes of data over millions of years.
Whoa.
Even in hostile environmental conditions.
Whoa.
Crystalline storage, finally.
There you go. For travel, the team intends to use MIT-developed ion electrospray propulsion technology.
Wow. God bless you.
Mm-hmm. Which should reduce the time it takes to reach Mars to 4 months.
Wow. That's
as far as the digital content being sent to space, anyone on planet Earth can contribute. There is a fee, which I will not mention, but if you're interested, you can check out the story.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's free if it's coming from a developing world.
Huh.
You can add text, images, audio, and video to the time capsule. The team is working with a number of additional sponsors to help fund the $25 million project.
Oof.
Along with experts from MIT, Duke University, UConn, and Stanford, American astronaut Buzz Aldrin is assisting with the project as an advisor. So
neat.
I'm just imagining, like, aliens eventually finding this when humanity is, like, long dead or something like that. And they end up scooping it up and thinking, like, oh, wow, evidence of, like, an advanced society, crystalline storage, all of this. Let's find out what's on this thing. And it's just, like, a whole bunch of random YouTube videos.
Well, there's a question for you. What would you send? Would you send some? What would you send?
Random YouTube videos.
Audience out there in Radio Land, what would you send?
Cat video. Cat
right, video. Yeah.
There's going to be at least one cat video. Yeah.
Right.
Somebody somewhere is going to be like, screw it. I'm paying it. Beep. Cat video.
Here's my cat video.
Right. They will literally think that we are a race of cats or something like that just because of all of the cat videos.
These things must have been gods. They have video of
cats
them.
Cats ruled them.
Everywhere.
Right.
They keep filming these things. They must...
Must have been some sort of religious significance.
There's some sort of subservient race that's larger, too. Weird.
So there you go.
There you go?
There you go.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone else has any other stories they'd like to contribute.
I do.
Okay.
Jason has one more. Nice.
Okay, it's going to be difficult not to mention numbers here in the terms of monetary values, but basically... Something kind of interesting is finally unfolding with the entire digital structure of things, how they're letting you get video games on consoles. And I'm happy that it's happening on my console of choice, which is the Xbox One system. Mostly because they finally started doing interesting things with pre-releases that are digital. And so there, it was always a big thing before, like, okay, well, I want to get my game from GameStop because it's going to have, like, all of the random crud that I can plaster on my character, as well as probably some extra, like, discount on another product and, like, on down the list. Well, finally, the consoles are kind of catching up with this idea, and they're giving their own incentives. Xbox is giving what they called reward points, which don't specifically have a monetary value, so I'm going to use those. For pre-ordering, the next batch of games that are coming out, mostly the Master Chief Collection and the new, Sunset Overdrive game. Not only do you get access to all of the normal pre-release stuff, the crud that you can throw on your characters, but they're giving a sizable amount of these points, which end up cashing in to a fairly good amount of money.
In the game?
Well, no, as far as the Xbox ecosystem.
Oh, okay. You can
use it for other games and so on. So it's kind of like, I think mainly, like Walmart and Target were the big ones that if you pre-order a game through them, you may not get all of the nifty stuff that GameStop has, but you'll probably get a pretty good coupon.
Okay.
So Xbox is kind of doing best of both worlds, which is a nifty step in the right direction as far as digital distribution in my mind. So
fascinating.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds from here, if this becomes a standard thing. So far, it's only those two games that are doing it, but it's a sizable chunk of money that you end up getting out of it. So I'm actually kind of thinking about pre-ordering both games now because of it.
There you go. Could be fun.
Well, speaking of things that are fun, they could be fun. Because if you want free tickets to a concert, KSU has got you covered. Just listen in and you could win. See which shows we're giving away tickets for. Go to KSU.org and click on promotions. And I know as the months go by, usually in the concert world, when things kind of pick up, they tend to have some pretty good stuff. Like, I think they've refilled the ticket binder. So if you want a chance to maybe get into one of those popular concerts and not have to really spend much money or beyond.
Or any.
Yeah, or any. I mean, I guess if you want to buy something at the concert, then you'll have to spend money. That's true. To get in, you might not have to. Maybe you'll win some. So just go to promotions, click on that on KSU.org. All right.
And just keep listening for other DJs to give away tickets.
Yes. Something we don't really do.
Right.
On our show, because it's not our
Because we don't like giving things away. We feel like we we give so much of ourselves as it is. That
well, it's also more that we're not really a music show,
right?
It's true.
Giving away musical performances that it cheapens us.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I'm just gonna turn your mic off. Anyway, speaking of turning mics off, I'm gonna throw it to some more music, and then we'll come back with some geek talk and the core, and we'll finish out the show. So we'll be back with more Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
All right, we're back. More Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. We are now on Geek Talk.
Geek Talk.
So, talk. Caleb,
I
know you did something over the weekend that sounded interesting, intriguing.
Yes. We went up to, or down to...
upstairs, downstairs?
Yes, upstairs, downstairs. Now, we headed a little...
Turned British.
A little bit south to Cambria, which is just spitting distance from Hearst Castle, which is now Hearst. It's a national historical monument nowadays.
Oh, okay.
It has a really long name that I can't remember off the top of my head. But the main reason we were going there was to experience with one of their evening tours of the estate. And what makes these different than a normal tour is that they actually have people in period dress reenacting and just hanging out in the rooms while you're there.
Okay.
So, you know, when you do a normal tour, it's really cool. It's a fascinating, like, just architectural piece just on its own merits.
Mm.
And going through it without people is cool because it's, you know, but it becomes very much a museum at that point, which it is, but it feels like another museum, any other museum, which just happens to be like contained in a cool location. But when you see the reenactors in the scene in these areas where the public can't generally access, it really kind of brings home the fact that this was also a house. It was a summer house, but it was like people really did live here.
Okay.
And like, it just was kind of interesting. Like, you wouldn't think it'd make that big of a difference, but it makes a huge... It really does change the experience to see people in the chairs, people playing cards on the card tables, or billiards in the game room and stuff that.
Yeah. How many people like do they generally put in a tour?
Each tour group is roughly 18 or so.
Oh, okay,
so the you know, you go up on a bus with like, you know, 18 times 3 effectively people on it, and then they subdivide you into groups from there, so that way you can actually kind of move through the house in a somewhat orderly fashion, and you know, tour guide can actually speak to everybody as need be.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about. For it was just like, okay, like a huge pile of people, and then it's like, well, it's neat with the reenactors, but you sort of lose some of that if there's like, if you're in this giant group of people. But
They keep the group.
18, that's not bad.
Yeah, so. They keep the groups pretty small. They move at an unfortunately brisk pace, but but it's like a living tour, so it's a little bit different than this like an art gallery where you can kind of gently stroll through the displays.
Were there any like little kids trying to poke the people?
No, there was no little children on this particular tour. Hearst Castle isn't generally big with little kids.
They outlawed little children.
Well, no,
for one night only.
They're just not. It's just not as popular a location.
The children are put in the dungeon in the basement.
The playroom.
But yeah, it's a very worthwhile tour, either day or evening. But if you want to go for the evening ones, you got to get your ticket early because they actually sell out pretty quick.
Oh, okay.
And they only do like there's only like three or four like tour times in the evening that you can get in before they just kind of they close it all down.
Okay. Do they encourage the audience or whatever to dress up as well when they do
they don't say. Okay. We chose to do that for ourselves just because we thought it would be fun. And it was. We actually one of the stops, the tour guide actually kind of included us as part of the tour by mentioning because he was talking about the different types of fashion that were popular in the day, and we actually happened to be wearing ones that looked like they fit in.
That's better than them pointing at you, well, this one is completely inaccurate.
They wouldn't do it this way. They'd put it on the left and not the right.
They would never wear tennis shoes by Fila.
Yeah, because they didn't exist, but yeah. it's an anachronistic.
No, because people were ashamed of their Filas back then. That's all it was.
They were not.
There were Fila bands in, yeah.
Oh, okay. But yeah, that was one of the, and then we just hung out in Cambria, which Cambria had an interesting thing going on. They had a Scarecrow Festival, which apparently is an annual event. We didn't know it until we got there. And we're like, oh, wow, some of these are actually really interesting. Like, they had varying degrees of quality and work, but like some of the cooler ones was a Felix the Cat. Outside of the Black Cat Cafe. Another group did...
They had them like outside of...
Yeah, so they're
businesses or stuff? Like
businesses.
Please tell me you got pictures.
We got a few. One of them, there was a Maleficent that was especially good. We got a picture of that one. But we were driving for some of it, so we didn't get quite as many pictures of them.
Oh, okay.
But there was almost pretty much everybody had... it was a very, very common thing for businesses to have Scarecrow out front, or houses even had them for fun and stuff like that. So it was kind of a unique thing.
Yeah,
and that is pretty neat.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that. I'm like, oh, that's actually really kind of cool. So that was kind of our weekend. And we also stopped at the Firestone Brewery for a little bit. That was very cool.
From Borderlands?
No, not it wasn't Flame Rock. It was it's in Paso Robles. A local microbrew. They specialize in IPAs.
So you drank a ton of IPAs?
No, I had some. Actually, one of them was quite good.
You found one.
I found that now that the IPA has become more common, and while it's still a very attractive brew, it's not the like everything is IPA. And so then now it seems like now people are making things that don't give you IPA face but are still classified as IPA. So there's that.
Varying levels of IPA.
There was one that the one that I liked the most was called the Wookiee Jack. And it's a rye and IPA mix. It's quite good.
I like rye PAs, actually.
So it balances out some of the stronger flavors for those who are interested.
Because rye is already a fairly strong flavor, so it kind of works.
It's true. Yeah.
I feel like I should say don't drink and drive. Drink responsibly.
Yes, please do.
I don't know why. I just feel like I should throw that out there.
Everything's about driving with you.
Well, we're on the radio, so cars have radios generally. Yeah,
that's
generally.
True.
Generally. And speaking of cars, you watched Gotham, which doesn't have the Batmobile in it
yet.
Okay, I will run with that a little bit. I think it's fascinating that show that they perfectly pull off, that it's a show that takes place in the past simply by having them drive around in an old car. Like practically nothing else about the series is like old, quote unquote. They don't go all out. They just basically make sure that they don't have cell phones in their hands and that they drive around an old car.
So they're driving like a Ford Taurus or something?
No, like one of the like the standard police car from the 80s, basically.
Oh, okay.
Like a really boxy, I don't know if it's like a Crown Vic or a Lincoln or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they do have cell phones.
Right, but like the big like car phone thing? I don't know. The StarTAC?
No.
The Motorola?
Because there's a scene, I mean, unless I remember it wrong, I mean, like, Penguin talks to someone's mom, like, pretty sure that was a cell phone that the mom, like, called. I don't want to say, like, too much to spoil stuff, but it's,
It's a remote phone of some sort.
It's like, what they do with Batman generally is they don't say it's blah, blah, blah. Because if you're unfamiliar with Gotham, it's, you know, Bruce Wayne is a little kid. His parents were just killed. Jim Gordon is not the commissioner yet. He's a young rookie on the force.
Mm-hmm.
So in actuality, you're like, okay, so this should be like in a certain decade. But they never really say like this is 1983 or, you know, something like that.
Right.
They just like...
It's not the here and now.
Yeah, but it's not like they don't throw it in your face of like like a giant boxy cell phone. Like there's nothing in it to really like time stamp it. It just they just kind of give a feel of, well, I mean, I guess sort of a best example maybe is like Batman animated series.
Mm-hmm.
Like that felt kind of older, but like it wasn't like, you know, dated like 1945 or something, or you know, like 2000. Yeah. You know, it had this feel to it, and that
style that gave it, lends it to a certain time aesthetic, but not necessarily linking it to a particular time and place.
Yeah, or even even the Tim Burton Batman movies. I mean, so much of those are like, what year is this taking place in? It's like there's clearly stuff that it would be the present then, but then there's just styles of like, wait, it's kind of old, classic, like gangstery sort of stuff. So it's like, that's kind of the show. Like I how I kind of see the show. I mean, it's definitely like you wouldn't watch it and go like, okay, this is like 1965 or something, you know?
Right.
It's,
yeah.
But
okay.
But yeah,
I think that's a good thing because the Batman story is sort of an ageless story, so to speak. So having it like not now, but not so long ago, but let's, you know, kind of lets you figure out what the era is.
Yeah. It almost has to be because it's so old and
can't
keep like changing like the age of the character.
All the basic superhero stuff, it's like they sort of change. I mean, if it really was like, whoa, Batman would be how old? Like,
right. Yeah.
100 plus something.
So. But go on.
Well, no. There's a bunch of little things that I really like about the show. A lot of the things that people kind of pegged as missteps, I don't find anywhere near as troubling as I thought I would, because they sounded really legitimate when people were talking about like the real in-depth reviews of it. But I do... one of the original things that was pointed out was that kind of the big... standout roles are unfortunately not Jim Gordon all that much, but the Penguin and what's his name, the other detective,
Harvey Bullock.
The actor that plays Harvey Bullock is actually like one of my favorite actors currently. There was a series that died way too quickly for my taste called Terriers that I wish would have lasted forever, but it is nice to see him end up in a series like this, which obviously has a lot of force behind it because they really want to make this work because people like Batman a lot.
Donal Logue, the actor.
He's one of those guys, like, you see his face and go, oh, that guy.
Right, you've seen him everywhere.
I've seen him in Vikings. I've seen him in Terriers. I've seen him in this, like that. He's like,
So, okay.
Yeah, Terriers was the first place where I saw him, and I was like, no, that guy is really good. So, yeah, it's neat seeing them tap somebody like him to be that detective specifically. And it'll be interesting to see how he ends up changing over time too, and how long the show will last. But yeah, Penguin was the other big surprise for me, just because having him start out so young and such a low position within all of the like mob organizations that they have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Having him be sort of this youngster that has a lot of aspirations and definitely has this like really criminal, violent side.
A sinister edge, you might say.
Well, I think what they did really well with him so far is that you kind of, the second that you kind of feel like he's nobody that you'd ever be afraid of, he ends up pulling some little trick where he ends up killing somebody like really quickly in a split second. It's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting that. So yeah, that is a brutal person.
Well, I'm going to segue from something that's not brutal at all, but something that is actually very helpful and very good. If you are an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes, but have limited time to volunteer, join the San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help finding loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can help save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join us on sjanimaladvocates.org or look for us on Facebook. But that sounds like an interesting show. I need to look that one up online. See if it's available for streaming.
Hulu, I know for sure.
Okay. Hulu and Fox like to work together. It seems like
they tango. It seems like.
Mm-hmm. But I think Fox is one of the major stakeholders in the birth of Hulu, so I guess that makes sense. But
yeah, I remember back when I was really hooked on House. It was like one of the best places to catch relatively quickly turned around episodes of House too. So.
Mm-hmm. Something not related to Gotham, but something I recently finished was BioShock Infinite. Yes, I'm a little late to this party, but yeah, I finished BioShock Infinite. And I stand by the statement that the game should be definitely heavily considered for capital A art in terms of like its intention, its scope, what it does in the game. The ending is not as strong as the game itself, which is not to say that it's bad. It's just
crazy ending, huh?
Unsatisfying. Because
okay.
To me, it's like it's a really clever ending. And then I started to think about it. And I'm like, no, this ending is beginning to crumble before my eyes. Well, it's still a really good game. I don't want to get too spoilery, but like,
well, I would say it's up to Jason because the game has been out for a few years now. Yeah.
Okay.
Then talk about it.
Fair
warning, we're going to talk about the ending of BioShock Infinite.
So. Right.
I'll try and keep it like, you know, cannot like completely spoilerific, but like
there's always a lighthouse.
There's always a lighthouse, and there's always a girl, and there's always a man. the whole like multiverse converging timelines, separating timelines, quantum state stuff was really interesting. Like I liked that the philosophy that they explored as they went through the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when they got to the end, they had something, but they didn't execute it really well. Because like the big like reveal is that the main character is both hero and villain.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see where that character could split and become either of those two people, but they didn't really like flesh out how or why there was a split other than one of them apparently picked a religious path and the other one did not. And the assumption, the way they present it, it sounds like the one that picked the religious path went crazy and the one that didn't stayed relatively sane, which
troubles you maybe a little bit.
They tied a lot of it to the I forget the name of that massacre, but
the massacre at Wounded Knee. Yeah.
Yeah. They like, they tied a lot of, like, that's kind of where a lot of it split. Like,
mm-hmm. And that's where, yeah, go ahead.
Oh no.
And that's where I see the split happening, because at that point, the psychology of the person could flip either to being like, the whole like son of the patriots thing, like the founding fathers were right and everybody else is wrong, and or the more the hero line that you see the Booker taking throughout the player's side of the story. And I can see that happening, but they didn't really flesh out that's where it happened. Like the game seems to, in the ending seems to imply that it happened when one character chose a path that was, that has that had a religious twist, a baptism, and one did not. But I find a fundamental flaw in that, in the, if the character that goes off the deep end and starts wants to destroy the world because it's not the founding, not the way the founding father saw it, wouldn't have had any remorse to begin with and wouldn't have been anywhere near the river for a baptism, whereas the one that shied away from that seems like he might, like, I can see why he didn't do it, but he would be the one that I would see like actually going there in the first place, because he's actually, you know, dealing with or trying to sort through the feelings that he's having. I'm not sure if I'm explaining this very well.
I think I understand. And this is coming from the guy who hasn't played it at all.
When you get to the end, you may think I'm completely out to lunch, but that, in which I'm at peace with. But I still like the game as a whole. The whole game is excellent. Mm. Excellent with a capital E, and excellent. And a salent. The whole game is really good.
Capital salent.
Yeah. It's just when I got to that final part where they tried to wrap it all together, it's like, I felt like they tried to be more clever than they needed to. And that created sort of a situation where it's almost like it got a little bit beyond their grasp. Not because they couldn't do it, but because like they were like, let's do this really clever thing. And it comes off as clever, but it doesn't come off as good, in my opinion. So,
I'm trying to, I mean, because it's probably been a while since you've played it. Yeah, I'm like, as you were speaking about it, I'm trying to remember, like, okay, yeah, bits and pieces I remember. Yeah. Yeah, I remember, to me, my favorite part of the game was just the relationship between Booker and spacing on her name.
Yeah. It's bad. Likewise.
But yeah, their relationship, because, like, and I did, I mean, we have already spoiled stuff, but when they went to Rapture,
that was awesome. That was, I want the downloadable content just for that alone. I'm like, I want
that,
to go.
That's
exploring.
Good DLC. That's solid DLC. But okay. But yeah, that was a cool little it's Rapture, all awesome. But Elizabeth,
yeah, just look at Elizabeth.
But yeah, I like, to me, their relationship, again, interactive stuff, like, that was kind of my favorite part, because when I sort of compared it back to BioShock 1, while I don't remember like names of a lot of kind of the side characters in the original BioShock, just because it's been so long and I can be pretty bad with names, I found the side characters in the original BioShock way more interesting than in Infinite. Like, Infinite, I didn't really care like about this revolution thing that was going on. I mean, it was like, it was interesting, but like none of the side people, I was just kind of like, all right, this guy doesn't like this. It seemed to me there was a lot of stuff like you had to kind of listen to those books or
the audio.
Like to kind of get some of the backstories going on. I ended up just not really like finding them as interesting as the ones in BioShock, like the crazy the guy was like hosting a party and like plastered people up, and then was like the dancing, like there was that guy, there was a doctor over in here, like there were just, to me, there was way more interesting little side characters in in the original BioShock in that world compared to Infinite. It was like, that person's okay, but it was more like, I liked Booker and Elizabeth's relationship, I liked how they handled music, and like some of the like locations were like interesting,
yeah,
like places, but it just, none of the, yeah, just none of
the, yeah, the, and that's one of the things about like Infinite, is that you have to kind of buy into or like enjoy playing the relationship of Booker and Elizabeth for the game to be really interesting, because everyone else is sort of there to kind of facilitate the understanding of the relationship of Booker and Elizabeth.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting what their relationship turned out to be.
Yeah.
I was surprised, like, oh, okay. And it was kind of funny because, well, I thought it was a little funny. I was thinking about like working on a mashup video while that was, you know, still popular and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of something like, oh, okay, I kind of have this idea. And then I'm glad I didn't go with it, because when I found out their relationship, it's like, it could be taken a little weird.
Yeah.
Maybe I won't do that. So,
yeah. Yeah. I could see that being a little bit off-putting it in terms of like, if you were to try and mix it up with something else, but it's very good for what it is within the
realm.
Well,
it's just like, say, you know, you want to do this video more about like, hey, a relationship and love, and then you find out their relationship, you're like, well,
that doesn't quite work the way I intended it.
Yeah, there's love, but not the initial intention.
Not quite the way the song was written.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that could be taken really weird, and I don't want that, but yeah, that was a cool little twist, and I did enjoy my time with it. I think, like you said, I think, no,
and I think it's one of the best looking games that I've ever seen on the 360. Like, in terms of like what they did with the visual cues and the environment itself, just, I was like, wow, this place is cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember I put like a list together of like my top. I think I did 13 games from 2013 or something, or 12 games, or whenever the year that one came out.
That was 2013, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I definitely put it on my list because it was still like, it's still a solid game. But yeah, I can see the ending is definitely has some controversy to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it.
And again, it's not a terrible ending. It's just that they went with clever as opposed to like, went with clever and not nearly as well thought out as the rest of the game feels in terms. And so if it, because the rest of the game is so, so well put together. And okay, I just remember one of the things that does kind of bug me about it is that throughout the game, like the main reason that you're doing all of this is to find out why you get to the end and why isn't really answered. You get who and you get how, but why is never quite answered. And I feel like that was a question that was asked a lot during the actual plot elements of the game. And then I get to the end, it's like, I would have, not that I need every single iota of the details of the story laid out before me, but if you're going to have me ask why, maybe give me why you think, and then I can decide whether I agree with that or not. And then it's my version, my feeling about the events versus the game creators, and that happens all the time.
Yeah,
and
I will say we'll backtrack a little bit though on side characters. I will say I did like Lutessa and
the Latisse.
Yeah, the brother and sister pair were cool. Like when they popped in and showed up and was like, kind of a mind trip of when you, because it does one of those things, like when it ends, you know, you want to go back and be like, oh, okay. Like all, because every time they pop in, like thinking back, now that you sort of know like the story and
how it all works out.
Yeah. How it works out. You're like, okay, when they flipped the coin, or when they showed up, like, just, you're like, whoa, this is so, it's deeper than I expected, but
yeah,
it's not, you know, not always perhaps answered completely, but
yeah, and some things left unanswered is fine, but it just seemed like some of the big questions that they were trying to push the characters to push the game, the player and the characters to understand weren't quite answered in a way that seemed to satisfy the impetus that they, the emphasis they put on it in the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot, and that's why, what you brought up is why I still say the game should be considered capital A art, because it is that well thought out throughout the gameplay. Like, all of the gameplay leads back and loops back on itself in really smart ways, and
yeah,
creates a deeper knowledge of the experience, creates a deeper experience when you kind of like can see it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely worth an experience. I mean, if you enjoyed BioShock and BioShock 2, it's worth checking out if you haven't.
Definitely.
All right, I think that's going to do it here for Robots Attack on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. We will be back next week, next Monday, from 7 to 9. Have a wonderful weekend. And if they want to check out maybe like previous episodes or some of the news articles we talked about, how can they do that, Caleb?
Yes, well, if you want to participate live in the show, you were at the end, but you can still send us your thoughts and feelings and make comments on the things that we've posted on Facebook at facebook.com/robotsattackshow and Twitter, twitter.com/robotsattackme. But if you want one place to find everything, archive episodes of the show, links to the stories that we've talked about, show notes of the things we've discussed earlier, you can go to robotsattack.me. That is where all of these our past episodes and show notes reside, and you can catch up there and find more awesome things there as well. And leave comments. You can email us through the page. All kinds of fun things like that.
That's right. All right. Any closing words, Jason?
No.
All right.
Very good then.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.
Raccoon, Veronica, Mistel.